like to ask or share something?
I have two questions. First is about this notion of right and wrong. You've said that maybe there is nothing wrong. I assume that it's not because of looking at this specific moment and saying that there is nothing wrong, but it's more of a general statement that maybe nothing is wrong, maybe it can't be wrong. What does it mean to be right or wrong? Then you wrote in the paper, in one of your notes, that sometimes when we follow our thoughts and emotions, we might do something that will harm us in the long run. But what is this long run? I mean, it's also about our thoughts and emotions in the long run. So I'm asking myself, okay, so what else is there except the thoughts and the emotions that can lead me in choosing? I really don't know.
Yeah. Could you hear? No. Yeah. I'll summarize. So this thing that I keep saying about maybe nothing's wrong, what am I talking about? And also, how does that fit with that I'm saying, that sometimes our thinking and emotion can lead us to do things that will harm us in the long run and the short run. But if we can't trust the thinking and emotion, then how do we decide?
And how can it be that it can harm us if nothing is wrong? Yeah?
How can there be harm if nothing is wrong? So when I say, what if nothing is wrong, I don't mean everything is right. But the finding our compulsion to be oriented against what's wrong and finding that that does not help but harms. So our way of taking in our experience goes through a filter of what's wrong. And it seems like it's happening, maybe you're just more here, more direct with me, but it seems like many times I'll make a suggestion to one of you, and you'll say, yeah, but nothing's wrong. I'm feeling fine. I'm like, yeah, I'm not saying something's wrong when I say maybe you could put a hand here or feel your legs, or the readiness to take it as, what do you mean, something's wrong with me? That readiness to take things as something's wrong is what I mean. So translated into the back into the Buddhist language, this morning in the meditation, in case you were awake at that time, anyone, when I talked about noticing the more processed mental version of life that's all about me, how dry it is. When it's me and about me, me about me and what I think they think about me and da-da-da, it's not very fun in the long run. And the contrast of when I'm here and maybe I realize nothing special is happening. There's the sound, that sounds like the wind moving in the trees. There's a bird. The body has space. Nothing special, but wow. It's not so dry. So the dryness of, I would first need to check off that I have had a day of joy, so then I could relax a little bit. Or at least, I hope, if I check off that thing of I had a moment of joy, then I'm supposed to be able to be allowed to be here. Then I might relax. That's dry. It doesn't give anything. It costs energy. And being here, realizing we're already here, it's already intimate. It's already happening. I don't have to make it up. I don't need specialness. It's wet. So dry in the Buddhist language, tanha, thirst. It feels dry, and I think by going further in the same direction, I might get some water, even though I don't smell any water that way. I think if only I could be perfect, then I could relax. If only I'd be better, then I can relax. And there's something so much more than perfect. So much better than perfect. So much better than better. And it's so much better than perfect. Also, it doesn't promise me anything. By being here already okay, it's not promising me something that later on you can be acceptable or successful or they'll recognize you. It's not even promising you that you'll get enlightened. Enlightened. It's not promising you anything. The goodness of being here. There's no hope of improvement. And there's no fear of falling off. And because I'm not caught up in hope and fear, I'm here, which means I'm in touch. And the impossible is possible. I have a friend who had a dream. She had many dreams in her life that she was in a foreign country where she didn't know the language and she's lost. And she has to get to the airport because she's about to miss her flight. Many, many, many times she had this dream. And just recently she had this dream again. So she's at first in the dream in a city, kind of panicked. Maybe she's already missed her flight. And then all of a sudden, in a dream, she's in the woods on a dirt road and she has a map that she has made for herself. And she seems to be finding her way, but she still might have missed her flight. And she still doesn't know where she is and where how to get home. But she feels like the map is helping her find her way. And then comes this voice that she said in the dream was somehow both inside and outside. You're already home. You've always already been home. All those times that you dreamt you had to get home and you were going to miss your flight, you were always already home. But we believe. Our interpretation of the pain that we feel as something's wrong. We believe that because it's painful and uncertain, I'm not allowed to be here unless I do something to earn my place. But we don't know what place we would have, and we don't know what would earn it. And just so we try our best. And we do good stuff. And we're not free. And we don't see how good the stuff is that we've done. So we could call this talk today, Discovering Earth. Adama. One of the three words I know in Hebrew. The first retreat we did in Israel in the Negev was in the Adama. That's why I remember. And it was the desert, and it had been a heat wave the week before. And everybody came in their little t-shirts and shorts, and then it was freezing cold, rained every day until the last day. You never know. Sometimes we're the last to know. Sometimes that thinking self is the last to be informed of what's going on. There's an interesting process that can happen in discovering a planet. So there's they don't even know what to call it. A minor planet is one name for this thing called Chiron, which is kind of like a small planet and kind of like an asteroid and kind of like a comet. And it has a really weird orbit, and it's one of our neighbors. And it was photographed in the late 1800s, but it wasn't discovered. There were repeatedly photographs were taken that Chiron was in. But it wasn't discovered. Isn't that hilarious? It wasn't noticed. It was photographed. It was not noticed. It's much less named. So there might be so many things that are being perceived by you that might be interesting and are not being noticed by what you think you are. They're not being noticed by your thinking and emotional selves, of which there are more than one. It was only in 1977, like almost 100 years later, that finally somebody was like, oh, what's that? And then the funny thing would be, we say we discovered it, when we named it. When we cataloged it.
Maybe we rediscovered it. I'm sure some people discovered it in the past.
Could be. But how often we have these weird things that we don't even have a category for it yet. It's not a planet, it's not an asteroid, it's not a comet. It's a Pluto-like object in our solar system. It's a neighbor, relatively close. And if we think of every discovery in the solar system and beyond, it's been there, or more or less there. And we thought it wasn't there just because we didn't think about it. So how much is going on that we think isn't going on just because we don't think about it? And how much we think we've discovered just because we have started to think about it? And could we not stop, like not discovery as that day in 1977 when someone said, let's call it whatever, like G620 Chiron. Are there any questions in the moment or anything to share?
I was just wondering why you said the thinking and not being aware of, because you cannot think about something that you're not aware of. So it's not a thing from this awareness. Just as well.
Yeah. Well, let's walk there. Because we're so used to assuming that I belong to the thinking world, and what I think about is what is, gradually we could leave room for being aware of things that we're not thinking about. But at first, we only let ourselves be aware of what we think about. And we even aren't sure what's the difference between thinking and awareness. But gradually, we notice that something can notice I was thinking. I was distracted. I was dreaming. I was snoring. Or I was somewhere where I don't know where I was. And I wasn't thinking. Or I'm not sure what that was because there wasn't an I. So it's slowly. We have to start with what we start with, where we are, what we have. Because that's what we believe in. We believe in thinking and emotion. We think it's really important. We think that thinking and emotion is what causes things and delivers things and decides things. And if we start to notice any time that we make a decision, are we sure how that process, was it really, the thinking, and then where did those thoughts come from? And sometimes we can trace it. That thought was my mother's voice telling me you're not good enough or you're so great or whatever. And then under that influence, I went that way. So part of discovering Earth is starting to learn that we belong, and to practice feeling that we belong, that we could feel even physically that the body has the earth always. The body can feel gravity, that just every way that you could start to feel that you're allowed to be here. And noticing how much influence it can have on us, either like the fight to have my territory, or the excuse me, I'm sorry, I know I'm not really good enough, but could I maybe have, or I won't be really here, I'll just listen in, but. And this is a long process. So not to think you should have already done that when you were 5 or on your first day of your first retreat or something. It's a long process, discovering Earth. And thinking isn't strong enough to have that conversation. It can find its place in the conversation. More like, oh, wow, I noticed that the left side of my body feels the ground and my right side of my body doesn't feel the ground. And then the thought can say, okay, don't freak out. Are there any questions or anything to share? Could you hear?
No.
She's remembering yesterday when I was saying, questioning if we know what we want, and that it can be hard to know what we want. It can be really hard to know what we want. There are many ways to enter this question of what do we want, what's worth wanting, what are different kinds of wanting. There's a word, a root word in Sanskrit that's vid, and it's the root of like the Vedas, so knowledge, knowing. It's also different kinds of knowing. So it's also, vid is also the root of vedana, which is our filters, how we filter our experience. But if we stick with knowing, so how could I know what's worth wanting? How could I know anything? If it's not gonna be necessarily in my thinking or my emotion, then what else? What other kind of knowing? And the meaning of this root, vid, from which different kinds of knowing can branch out, it means sprouting, which is what in Hebrew?
Nivita.
Nivita. Yeah? Usually there's like several ideas. Okay, so this there's a seed that looks like a nothing much or something weird, something from outer space. But it doesn't look like a tree. And then something very weird starts to happen. And it breaks itself apart often. And then something that doesn't look at all like the seed starts to come out. That's white usually and very exposed, sometimes red, whatever, but often it's white. And it's both full of life, vigorous, and very fragile. Fragile?
Chavriri.
Breakable.
Chavriri.
Chavriri.
Oh, yeah.
That's a nice way to say fragile. At the same time, so powerful. And at the same time, so breakable. And that going together. And if we can have that feeling and energy of what sprouting is as a way of feeling the whole process, so not only when the seed sprouts, but when the roots keep going and branching out, and then the stem comes up, branches out, that there's something wonderful about being aware of sprouting. And I think there's something in us that's receptive to that. Maybe I can bring in the word develop and take it apart. Because we start to think now of development as something it's really more of a destruction. But the word develop is to uncover. Velop, like envelope, is to put inside something. So to develop is to let something come out of the covering. So I'm going to call that sprouting. If we can kind of get the feeling of the wow and the juiciness of any time you've seen someone or something sprouting, including in yourself, like when an insight just happens, or you see a child like walking for the first time, for them like so high up, when am I gonna fall down?
But there's so much operating in the dark before something sprouts that for me I feel like I have no patience for it. Mm-hmm. It's like I wanna dig and let it out. Yeah. It doesn't work that way.
You kill it.
So could you hear that there's so much waiting in the dark before anything happens? There's so much waiting in the dark before anything comes above the surface. That's basically the situation. And it is like being in the dark. For us, we want to see it, and only then I will so-called trust it. Not really trust. Trust is when it's in the dark. So she's saying, I don't have patience. I want to dig it up to let it out. But if we recover our ability to be natural, a natural knowing that's very joyful, that loves waiting, like, whoa, it's sprouting in there, I can feel it.
Unfamiliar.
It's unfamiliar. But we did dig it up enough times to see that, oh, I'm so sorry. And that's what we usually do with our thinking and emotional activation, is in the name of wanting it to grow and develop, we kill it. Or we give it a really hard time. Maybe it can manage. And then we wonder, why is this taking so long? Well. So the joy of resonating with sprouting takes us sometimes to places that are not only unfamiliar, but sometimes uncomfortable at least. And we have a lot of really simple examples of this. So just in the yoga, or in any yoga. In any yoga, it might be more about the stretch that they're asking you to do. In Odelia's yoga, every time I find these muscles that I forgot I had, and I'm kind of sore all day in a really nice way. But it's not like pleasant in the usual sense. But it's, sprouting. And the sprouting takes us to be way more exposed than we think we should be, than we understand as safe. But the sprouting goes there. And we have that practice of feeling, and okay, that's fear, that's normal. Jaya said that's supposed to happen. Good, okay, and what else do I feel? My feet, etc. And the roots keep spreading out, and they're so exposed. And they're such beginners, they're tiny. And they look like nothing. And our thinking is saying they're nothing, that's not enough. They're so weak, and they're like, I break through rock, just watch me. So knowing what we want, we can have on two levels. There can be like more on the psychological, noticing what I don't have inner permission to allow to be part of my life. So, and we might just happen to find ourselves realizing, oh, I could actually put another, I notice that I'm uncomfortable sitting so low, and I could, put another cushion. I'm allowed to, and kind of, Or this is uncomfortable and my inner permission is not there to be uncomfortable. It's just uncomfortable. The uncomplicatedness comes upon us. There are words in the Buddhist texts for what enlightenment is. That enlightenment is not a word in the text so much. That's our like dominant culture coming in. But two of my favorites are the sure heart's release. The sure heart's release. Sure, which is cool. It's not, obviously, it was not in English in the text. But sure, like it gives us that sense of like, safety enough to come into touch with life so that I can allow aliveness to move, something better than safety. It's not certainty, but it's not divided like, how am I doing? Is this okay? I'm not sure. What do they think? What am I supposed to be thinking? And just wholly. And then it's the sure heart, like that is talking about something we already have. There's a heart, which isn't the physical heart. It's not the emotional heart. What do they mean? Release. It's not the sure heart's full lotus posture for 30 minutes or following the breath for 36 hours without a break. It's not a trick that we learn how to do. It's the release of the heart. It's a release of something we already have. And another one, another word for awakening is, in the text, is unbinding. So it's developing. Uncomplicating. what we already have sprouting. So there's that, what we can kind of notice, I'm discovering what I want, means I'm noticing where my conditioning, my programming has kept me bound. And when that opens, and I realize, oh, I could have seconds of rice. Wow. Or I don't have to have seconds. Wow. And then there's another kind of, what do we want? That doesn't fit into thinking and emotion completely. And it is that movement that is in rhyming with sprouting, going along with how life is sprouting. Not biological life, some other life that is beyond birth and death and in here. And it's better than perfect. Another way to say the same thing really is that what we really want is whole, to be whole. It's so good when we find like that, ah, I'm all here, I'm all in. There's room for everything. And none of it matters in the way that I thought, because it's not a measurement of my value or how I'm doing in order to get value or whatever, or place. And that can feel like there's a disappearance of what I thought I was. It can feel like I'm all here. The word wanting also is another word for, in English, the feeling that something is wanting, something is lacking. And that's another word for the thirst. So the same word can be confusing. But what's important is we could say what life wants and how there's a yes in us already built in. Or we could say there are the different little selves in me, and this one wants that, and that one wants that. And then some original.
Present.
Original.
Present.
Presence, maybe. Living quality. That it's, we can say want, it's not about a preference though. It might happen to move in according to, like, in a way that I like. It might happen to move in a way that's I don't like. But something in me really resonates with and says yes anyway. Body, mind, heart, soul. Yeah. Your second question? No? Okay. Nitsan?
Actually, I have an urge to ask you about intuition, but I think you already answered.
Okay. Okay. Rauch.
I just wanted to share something which I think is very relevant to Yara's question and your metaphors of the sprout. Yara wanted to help us with planting in the plants. And when we took out they were not seedlings, of course. They were already little plants that came from the nursery. And the problem with many of them is that they have been too long in their pots. And so the roots have already trained around in a circle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you plant them like this,
mm-hmm.
they die.
Yeah.
The roots have to grow naturally. So you have to actually do something that seems harmful.
Yeah.
To take off the bit of roots that are already there, to cut them off, and to break the roots.
Yeah.
And that makes the plant fresh again. So it starts to really put roots in
yeah.
the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
appropriate metaphor, right, because most of our knowledge isn't a seed, but it's already comes from the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
It's already wrapped around many times in our,
mm-hmm,
in our thoughts.
Great. Could you hear? Half of it? Okay. And over there? Just curious. You could hear. Not quite. Okay. Let me just, because they couldn't, someone couldn't hear the whole thing. I'll just summarize. In putting in these lovely flowering plants into the ground, and taking them out of their little pots and seeing that actually the roots have been in the little pot too long. And so the roots have started to loop around on themselves in the too small space. And if you just then say, oh, they'll figure it out, it's natural, it should be natural, right? We just stick it in the ground. They die because the roots have thought that this is the way we're supposed to go, around and around. And they need to be in touch. And so you have to actually take off those roots that got trained in the closed circle and break and open so there's contact with the earth, and then they can, then they can be natural. Yeah, exactly. It's like when we're in a loop in our thinking or emotion, we're not in touch with life. And so, okay, all we need is to be in touch with life. Then, but when we have the idea, it's supposed to be natural. So we can hear this in all kinds of places and situations. Isn't it love? Or sex, or meditation, isn't it? It's supposed to be natural. So, what's wrong with me? Or why should I have to do something artificial? Well, because we've been doing something artificial for so long, we've gotten into a loop. We're not in touch. And then, because we don't have much practice being natural, so we need support. Sorry, 1 second. Were you going to ask something else back again? Or?
Yeah. It goes back to his example. It's about time. And maybe the reason of time, the importance of time, and also, because we talk a lot about patience and maybe time in the right moment and waiting that.
Yeah. So a question about timing and how, again, this question of how to decide, how do we know what is the right timing, when to be more patient and let the plant find its way, and when to rip off or cut off and tear open. And yeah. And from the thinking and emotional side, we can find the reasons to do it, to be patient or to rip it off. There's just from thinking and emotion, it's really hard. It's not really knowing unless we can have a lot of experience or have some help from someone with a lot of experience.
But if we notice that it's running around in a circle, it's probably time to rip it off.
Yeah. Well, now we know, thanks to your experience. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe, what if we didn't know, but we were in touch anyway, and we're like, oh, this plant, I feel like maybe it could go in the ground today. And we're like, oh, wow, look at that. It looks so, it catches my attention that it's all roots, all caught up in themselves. And it could happen if we're like really listening, not to the thinking and the emotion, and not thinking that I know if I don't know. It could happen that we just find ourselves like, what if I untangle you? And could be. But if we can feel now like, oh my God, timing is important, and my thinking and my emotion can't tell me the right timing, oh my God, and then we're in alarm and disconnected. So coming back, discovering earth. Maybe there's a way, maybe we can ask someone, maybe there's a way. Yes?
Sorry that I'm asking a question in the spirit of this retreat, like lying down.
No, please.
Sprouts are very gentle, and it's a long process. And now we're in the nursery, and going back to Tel Aviv or any other place, mm-hmm. urban place, is it possible that the sprouts are like demolished and then we start sprouting again?
Yeah. Could you hear? No. So sprouting takes time. And sprouts are defenseless. And so here we are in a nursery. We're in a place with good conditions for sprouting. What about when we go outside of here? Is it possible that the sprouts are demolished or killed off by the conditions of our life, and then we have to start again? So first of all, I would say none of you, even if this is your first retreat, none of you started sprouting here. You started sprouting a long time ago, some things. Some things are fully grown. Some things are moderately grown. Some things haven't started sprouting, etc. But where there is something sprouting, they need a special kind of condition. So this question on this retreat of feeling, in what way are you beginning? What are you a beginner at? And what conditions does that beginning need? And please give those conditions, because it's true. If the sprouts don't have the conditions, even if this is a metaphor from biology for something that's not biological, it's still accurate.
So 6 months in India?
He said 6 months in India, and someone said, it just makes you more crazy. Staying in touch, knowing how little we know, but that by being in touch we have more chance of getting a suggestion from inside or outside of, like, maybe water them. And what is the water? It might be remembering that I feel yes to life. It might be, oh, I feel my feet. It might be whatever came in your own, closest to your own inner language in your own way. And then what do you know from your past experience might help you give enough space for that? What comes now as a suggestion, inner or outer, that you resonate with that feels like, oh yeah. And noticing when the mind starts going to saying how impossible it is, how that feels in the body, and then questioning, is it true? And it probably isn't. And finding our way back out of the alarm system to the ground where the impossible is possible because of our own receptivity through our own love of life, our resonance with sprouting. In other words, coming back to our own willingness and how good it feels to be willing to do whatever it takes. And knowing that's more important than knowing how. It's more important to feel my own willingness to do whatever it takes, or to do at least a little bit of something. Willing to be not what I thought I am. Willing to transform and find that's very weird. I don't know what that is. That's more important than knowing how to. It's more important than understanding what is happening. understanding has its place only because mostly we trust our thinking and emotional charges. We accept that as our reality. And when we think we understand, we relax. And then we're in touch and it's more trustworthy. Even if my understanding is incorrect, I relax. And that can be helpful for a while.
That's why when you say, about knowing, you said, okay, so something comes up and you feel like, okay, for that, you feel this, okay, so, but what if this relaxation, it can also come from the thoughts and from the emotions. So yeah, you just said that understanding something, like, oh, okay, I know this is familiar. Yeah, you know, there is a lot of reason.
That's only a mechanism in my own mind because I'm requiring understanding as the ticket to go in to life. And so we can give the ticket, okay. Like with my kids, sometimes we play the game. We used to play the game when they were smaller. There would be some passageway and they would block the passageway. And you can't pass unless you give a ticket. And then it's like, oh, okay, here's my ticket. No, no, you need a gold ticket. Okay, here's my gold ticket. Much later on, a recognition can happen. Oh, now that I've experienced this fully hundreds of times, I might then hear something differently in a talk or in a book or something. Oh, maybe that's what they mean by mindfulness. Oh. So turning more towards the source of things. There are sayings, water the roots, not the flower, not the fruit, not the leaves, water the roots. Turning towards the source of things. So sometimes that can be in meditation, allowing a natural kind of gravitation towards just a sense of aliveness that kind of gathers you or absorbs you, and then it's not so important whether you're really with the breath or with the sounds or with the object. Turning towards the source, sometimes there's a quality of that source feeling in the lower belly or in the contact with the ground. Sometimes it can be kind of geographical. Body geography. Sometimes it's even recovering a sense, no matter what your childhood was like, somewhere in you, what would turn towards the mother, let's say. So sometimes, like in India, when you were enjoying it until you got Giardia or whatever. And then sometimes it can come like, oh, mommy. Recovering that turning towards what could have been a source. Maybe it wasn't a source of love and nourishment and ground and space. It's not that important what the mother was like, but our recovering the turning towards the source and away from the symptoms. Turning towards what we were born with. And letting our thinking, emotional self discover it whenever. 100 years later. There's something particularly about discovering the earth nowadays that I find has importance. Which some of you have described happening here, since we happen to have this year apparently also here, that it was conditions to make it really green and flowery right now. And the possibility that you, whether you like it or not, appreciation might sometimes happen. And I have the feeling that even though the word appreciation is not a juicy word, and it's even, it contains the word price, precio, but still, there's also a way that in English, the value of something appreciates means that the value gets more. So if we can have that feeling of, by connecting to the value of something, the value gets more. And if we would notice in human interaction, when you are appreciating someone, there is more to appreciate. And I've been talking to my kids now as they're starting to grow up towards, towards teenager time. So while I can, talking with them about feeling emotions in the body and about communication, about listening. And so the first time I brought up the power of listening with my son, he immediately said, I know exactly what you mean. Just today it was happening to one of his friends and a group of people. His friend Giuseppe was trying to tell a story and that person wasn't listening, so then Giuseppe turned to the other person in the group, that person wasn't listening, that person wasn't listening. And when no one's listening, it starts to be harder and harder to find words or enthusiasm or juice or even intelligence. Or I find this happens all the time living as an immigrant, a foreigner in a foreign country, living in Spain, and kind of mostly knowing Catalan and Spanish, but not enough to like joke around or understand. You know, I can get almost everything but that one word, and then I get the opposite meaning, that kind of thing. And if I want to express myself, it's kind of takes some time, and people are, and then I really forget Catalan. It's a phenomenon, it's an actual thing. And so what about the possibility that that power of listening with appreciation, or what is listening? Being receptive with appreciation, really tuning to the one flower or to the whole view, whatever it is. Receptivity and enjoying, appreciating, like, wow. So listening and adoring the person, and wow, where's their intelligence going to go now? Where's their mind gonna unfold? And then it does. I have the feeling that this attunement with appreciation is the kind of chemistry of what makes things on Earth happen well. To listen or to attune with appreciation. And that can be really hard when we know that we're in the middle of the sixth mass extinction on the planet. To say, no worries. Listening to the earth with appreciation.
But what if instead of wow, how intelligent he is, it's like wow, how dumb he is. That's so how can I get this appreciation in love in life?
Yeah. If I'm listening and the mind is going to the judgments, like wow, not wow, how intelligent, but wow, how dumb. Then what? Sometimes there's no other way except, wow, how dumb is this mind game? Because it brings out the dumb. Sometimes we can notice that's happening and notice, wow, how dumb is bringing out more dumb. And if what I really want is something else, how about I try to find that note of what I would love? I would love to have a connection here. I would love to hear what this person really is about, or just to have even silence, but connection. Or whatever, space even. Connecting to, what was the word you said? To Dharma?
To
Dumb. Accepting that movement of the mind, okay? Seeing that that movement of the mind, what it does is it makes more of what it's saying it doesn't want. And so what if what I really want is intelligence? I would love intelligence. And then sometimes it's instantaneous. Really. It's really weird, but sometimes it's instantaneous. As soon as you find even, I would love to see the intelligence or hear the intelligence here. And sometimes it is instantaneous. And sometimes it's harder, it's like the root is going through some rock or something. Maybe I'll just end with a poem that I've been wanting to read for a few days. By Wendell Berry. A bird the size of a leaf fills the whole lucid evening with its note and flies. A bird the size of a leaf fills the whole lucid evening with his note and flies. What? Oh. Lucid would first be translated as clear, but loose is light. And also in poetry, loose is a sound.
Loose.
So you can have all of those meanings. Thank you so much for being here. I feel very, very grateful for the power of your commitment to your practice, following through. It's really amazing. Thank you.